of Carrie Melinda's song, "Hush, hush, somebody's calling my name. Hush, hush, somebody's calling my name. Hush, hush, somebody's calling my name. Oh, my Lord, oh, my Lord, what shall I do? What shall I do?" I am going to retire in June of 2013. Oh, my Lord, oh, my Lord, what shall I do? I thought for a little bit that I might get some insight from Dr. Eben Alexander, a highly respected neurosurgeon who now knows from personal experience what the afterlife is like. He recently came out of a coma in which his brain's neocortex, what he refers to as the human part of my brain, was completely inactivated. After 7 days in the coma, all scientific equipment registering no cortex activity during that time, he emerged. He had had a classic mystical or near-death glimpse of ultimate reality, in which he experienced the love at the foundation of the universe and the knowledge that all is ultimately one. If you pick up a copy of the sermon in the North Vestibule, you will see a reference to where you can find out more about this. Alas, though, Dr. Alexander's experience isn't going to serve as a precise model for me. For instance, I'm hoping that the human part of my brain has not been inactivated during these past 2.5 decades. Further, his experience anchored him in deep certainty about afterlife, and I have anything but certainty. But I will take lessons of love and connection with me as I go into my new life. Maybe I will live closer to the ultimate that Dr. Alexander experienced because of the way that we here have lived together. All of us, 30-year members, and those of you who came for the first time 5 years ago or last year or today. This sermon is about our whole community, whatever your role or longevity or age. When you step across these thresholds, you step into a whole that is larger than the sum of its parts, and your presence affects us all. You affect me. I affect you. We affect each other ever and always. I have feelings about my afterlife. So do you. And you also have your own afterlife to worry about. The question that we about to retire people hear the most often is, what are you going to do? Oh, my Lord. Oh, my Lord. You are genuinely concerned about me. The people who ask me that question are genuinely concerned. And one of my colleagues, or my UU minister colleagues, who is retiring next month, replies, I am open to epiphany or inspiration. Me too. Contrary to the way that I have lived most of my life, I'm approaching retirement with a kind of radical agnosticism, open to what Quakers call the leading of the Spirit. I announced 2.5 years ago that I was retiring in June of 2013, giving us a long, much longer than usual lead time to get used to the idea. To do and be what we needed to do and be in order to honor our long time together. It has become increasingly clear to me that I do not have a clue about what it means to be retired. What it means to set aside the role of Boise's only parish Unitarian Universalist minister and the role of UU national board member for 8 years. Until I have more spiritual clarity about being just me, without 25 years of role expectation, and never mind the 20 previous to that where I was a high school drama and English teacher in that role, until then it makes little sense to me to set goals or figure out what to do. When July 1st, 2012 arrived, that was a couple months ago, I was flabbergasted to realize how hard it hit me. I thought, now it is, honest to God, my last year. If I'm going to be true to whoever and whatever I am behind the roles, my whole spiritual life this year needs to focus on being open, on listening, on going deeper into my heart and soul. If I'm going to avoid traumatizing myself in June of 2013, I need to spend these precious months paying attention to new ways of being, even as I stay engaged with this great congregation. So that's what I'm doing above all now. It's a little schizophrenic in that old split personality sense we used to use that word. I am intensely present here, seeing all of you and us with vivid poignancy. And I'm also internally making room for something else. I love all the new faces, and I have great hopes for you. I am wildly aware of projects I so want to see satisfactorily completed before I go. Median group, don't let me down. I see our patterns of being with each other. So grateful for the honesty we've achieved, sad for the times when it is not practiced. I am touched beyond words at how the leadership of this congregation, since I said I was retiring, has taken initiative after initiative, motivated to make us have the most robust help possible. I am crazy about our kids and our youth, and I grieve that I'll miss so many comings of age, Boston trips, and senior bridgings. I'm so aware that I have been shaped by all of you, new and old. I'm aware that some of you have been shaped by me in some ways, and I'm aware that we shape each other all the time. At the same time as I am here and engaged, I spend a lot of time in prayer and meditation and reflection, opening to what guidance the universe has to offer. This is not easy for me. I'm doing my level best, somewhat uncharacteristically, to refrain from plans, to listen to the voices within, to live here while I'm here, and also keep that heart's door open for glimmers of who I am when I'm not your minister. I wonder if you might be experiencing some of what I am. I wonder if we are not walking paths that are parallel at least some of the time. I hope that you are very, very engaged, stepping up to all kinds of plates perhaps in ways that you have not up to now, seeing its importance. It can be very tempting to step back as a response to the emotions of transition, when the opposite response is what we need to honor this community. And so I hope that you will open your hearts, your time, your talent, and your treasure. The hard times are less likely to come again some more if everyone here, new and old, knows the church is so much more than the minister, however long she's been here, and contributes passionately to its shining present and its shining future. And I hope you're keeping your hearts open to the possibility that unknown new things will happen that none of us can conceive of in our present time and space. I hope, both in your planning and your openness, that you're reflecting as I am on what we've shared, how we have been together for good and ill. I hope in your work and in your musing that you are seeing the good we continually create and carry that forward. I hope you can see what's not so good and keep making that better. Actually, I hope we can all do all these things all the time in all the transitions of our lives. Now, you might be relieved to know that I am not totally without ideas. I'll share with you some definite short-term plans and some longer-term possibilities. Here's a definite plan. To continue the good eating and exercise habits that are contributing right now to my increased energy and enthusiasm, optimism, and healthy knees and hips. Another definite plan. A couple of days after my final Sunday on June 2nd, I will go to Boston with our coming-of-age youth, accompanying for the last time those kids that I love so much. A definite plan. In mid-June, I will attend my last General Assembly as trustee to the Unitarian Universalist Association National Board after 8 years of service. I will also participate in the service of the living tradition, walking across the chancel as an officially retiring minister. Another definite plan. I will spend the month of July at St. Gertrude's Monastery in Cottonwood, Idaho, the Benedictine women's community that has meant so much to me all these decades. Definite plan. For at least a couple of years, I will be completely removed from this fellowship. I will not attend services or social occasions, and I will not act as minister to anyone. This sounds really hard, and I think it probably will be. But think about how incredibly difficult it would be for me, for you all, and for the new ministers if I were to hang around. I don't know how to be here and not be the minister. If I came in and sat in the corner and kept my mouth shut, I would sit in the corner and keep my mouth shut like the minister of the church. That's what I know how to do. At this point, you don't know how to treat me as not minister. And the poor new person would have to put up with a whole lot of cluttering energy that would get in the way of being in the present and planning the exciting new future. I'll be back sometime when we have gotten over each other, ministerially speaking. Remember what Mary Oliver tells us. It just breaks my heart, these words. That we must love with all our hearts, knowing our lives depend on it. And then when the time comes to let it go, let it go. Here's a strong likelihood for the little bit longer term future. Attending St. Michael's. This past July, when I was on vacation, I attended St. Michael's Episcopal Cathedral regularly with my very dear non-UU friend Morgan. St. Michael's is a thriving liberal congregation and clergy, and I might become a regular. I'll also attend the Quaker meeting from time to time, which I have done every summer that I have been here. Another strong likelihood, I will spend more and more time with non-church friends besides Morgan, folks that I'm already doing things with. There's a possibility to fill in for a friend who's going on a 3 or 4 month sabbatical. Another one, possibly enroll in the part-time version of our own Reverend Jackie Kelly's chaplain training program at St. Luke's Hospital. Another one, get a lot more involved in the arts, which I love so very dearly. I barely have time for Master Chorale now that it's associated with the Philharmonic because it has more rehearsals and more concerts, and I'm at night meetings all the time. I have no time for the Basque Choir, and I sang with them last summer and really had a great time and want to rejoin. There are other arts things that I look forward to doing. Another possibility is that after no less than a 6 month break from ministry, I might take on an interim ministry for a year or so. These are just possibilities, but you get the picture. I have never lacked in my life for interesting things to do. In 1985, I moved on with vigor from 20 plus years of high school drama and English teaching into 28 amazingly dynamic and rewarding years in seminary and Boise, including a lot of non-church activities and friends. And I'll bet that the next 28 are going to be just as great. I know it will. It will be a gift to me if you can genuinely not worry that I'll be sad or lonely or bored. Now, mind you, I'm not denying that we will miss each other very much and that we will, in fact, suffer grief. That is to be expected. That's what happens. But that is different from concern that I might have an unfulfilling afterlife. There is a lot about our life together, the past and the present and the few months that we have left of the future, that will shape how I am for the rest of my life, even though I don't know what the shape of that life will be. I'm imagining that you too are seeing what you find here, what you have found here with me, as shaping your individual and communal life, as you plan and as you just don't know. Staying engaged all the time, of course. We have weathered storms together and have built an ethic of honest, straightforward relationship most of the time. We have reflected Dr. Alexander's loving afterlife by tending to each other through deaths and marriages and crises and creatings and discoveries and disappointment and joyous revolution. Well, I was going to say revelation. We haven't done too much revolution, but maybe that'll happen next. And also just regular old mundane day-to-day life. We have acted at our best as though we are all part of the one. The song that Melinda and Carrie did for Offering was about the harp's eternal, which we, of course, take as metaphor, although Dr. Alexander might not agree with that. And part of the words of that are, souls have crossed before me, saintly, to that land of perfect rest, and I hear them singing faintly in the mansions of the blessed. There won't be perfect rest, heaven forbid, and we are anything but saintly. But we will create mansions of the blessed. We will part in grief and affection and hope and engagement, immensely grateful for all we have done and been together. We will create afterlives of beauty and love and oneness.